This report provides quantitative evidence to show that these families exist and that they're disproportionately harmed by anti-gay laws.
He lived here his whole life. It's like he never existed.
This is a story of two people, two adults, who really wanted to meet.
In North Carolina, birth records are sealed permanently. We find that's best for all members of the adoption triad.
You would be welcome in our home. We don't have a single Jesse Helms supporter in our family.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Robinson is welcomed at Lambeth, but Methodists defrock a lesbian. Facts and figures profile queer Hispanic American families and mothers, lovers, longing, and loggerheads. Those stories and more this week now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Jasmine Kamek.
And I'm John Beaupre.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending November 5th, 2005. The heat under the Anglican Communion's queer cauldron was turned up another notch this week as openly gay Episcopal Bishop of New Hampshire, Gene Robinson, sat down with the Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, the Communion's titular leader, at London's Lambeth Palace. Williams' spokespeople described the hour-long conversation as friendly but candid. Robinson called the Archbishop cordial and gracious, but Church of England traditionalists found Robinson's very presence in the UK provocative and his meeting with Williams disturbing. In town for the 10th anniversary celebration of the pro-GLBT church group Changing Attitudes, Robinson was permitted to dress as a bishop but could not officiate or preach at any of the services. He told reporters that, "It was God that changed my heart about coming to accept myself. It was a very hard-won fight. I would be crazy to turn my back on that now."
Meanwhile, the U.S. Episcopal Order that operates the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C., played host this week to a special GLBT-related event when the Reverend Nancy Wilson was installed as the new leader of the Metropolitan Community Churches. Wilson succeeds MCC founder, the Reverend Troy Perry, who has led what is now an international denomination since 1968. At the ceremony, Wilson announced the church's new ministry initiative, Unfinished World, Unfinished Calling, which was to be titled MCC's Focus on the Human Family until James Dobson's homophobic focus on the family empire threatened a trademark infringement lawsuit.
Also in the U.S., the Reverend Elizabeth Stroud has been defrocked by the United Methodist Church's highest court for being a self-avowed practicing homosexual. A complaint was filed against her after she came out in a 2003 sermon to her Germantown, Pennsylvania congregation, and a church panel decided in December 2004 to revoke her credentials. That ruling was overturned on appeal earlier this year, but the original determination was upheld this week by the church's judicial council. Conservatives hailed the ruling as being true to the denomination's book of discipline. However, two dissenters on the council issued a statement acknowledging the hurt, pain, and brokenness of the family of God, as Methodists continue to debate the role of lesbians and gays. Church counsel Thomas Hall said that Stroud, who was in a five-year relationship, could be welcomed back with both arms, but she'd have to be celibate. Stroud plans to continue serving as a lay staff member and to speak out for change, saying, "We can't have any question or any denial about the fact that the United Methodist Church practices discrimination against gay and lesbian people."
Another United Methodist Church Judicial Council ruling handed down the same day as Stroud's may have more far-reaching implications. The Reverend Edward Johnson had been placed on involuntary leave without pay by his bishop for refusing membership in his South Hill, Virginia church to a gay man. Johnson was reinstated by the council, which found that he had correctly exercised his pastoral discretion and that the bishop had exceeded his authority by disciplining Johnson without due process. That decision drew a strong response from the church's council of bishops in a November 4th letter signed by both liberals and conservatives, declaring that homosexuality is not a barrier to membership.
Spain's Constitutional Court this week agreed to consider the opposition party's challenge to the socialist government's marriage equality law enacted in June. In its appeal, the Partido Popular, or PP, asserts that marriage, as defined in the federal constitution, means the union of a man and a woman, and charges that the legislation allowing same-gender couples to wed perverts the social and legal institution of marriage. A court spokesperson said the tribunal would now seek the opinion of the government and both houses of parliament before ruling on the issue. She said a final decision could take months. Both government and lesbi-gay leaders believe the law will withstand the challenge. Its passage also angered the country's predominant Roman Catholic Church, but opinion surveys say most Spaniards back it. Following the Netherlands and Belgium, Spain was the world's third country to give full legal recognition to same-gender marriages. Canada became the fourth to do so in July.
A lawyer for two gay Israeli men filed suit this week to have their Canadian marriage recognized in the Jewish state. Jonathan Herland and Eyal Walarosh have been together for 2 years and were married in a civil ceremony in Toronto in July. But when they returned to Israel, the Interior Ministry declined to recognize the marriage. By refusing to register the petitioners as a married couple, the Population Registry deviates from its authority, the lawsuit says, behaving with unlawful discrimination against the petitioners and same-sex couples in general. Three of the four Israeli couples wed in Canada have ended up in Israeli courts, and all three cases are expected to be heard within 2 weeks. The couples argue that even though same-gender marriage is not permitted in Israel, legal marriages performed outside the country should be recognized there.
The latest chapter in a complicated seesaw battle over domestic partner benefits in the U.S. state of Michigan took place this week. Ingham County Circuit Court Judge Joyce Dragonchuk ruled in late September that governments and public universities should be allowed to provide health insurance to the partners of their gay and lesbian employees, saying those benefits do not conflict with a constitutional amendment passed by Michigan voters almost a year ago. That measure made the union between a man and a woman the only agreement recognized as a marriage or similar union for any purpose. Republican State Attorney General Mike Cox challenged Dragonchuk's edict this week in the Michigan Appeals Court, which agreed to delay implementation of domestic partner benefits until it can rule on the lower court's decision. Health benefits that cover domestic partners were also included in recent labor contracts negotiated with state employees. Democratic Governor Jennifer Granholm had put those benefits on hold pending the lower court ruling, but is now asking the state Civil Service Commission to approve them. A spokeswoman for Granholm said the governor was deeply disappointed with this newest delay.
Briefly, in other U.S. news this week, a county judge in Oregon upheld that state's voter-approved constitutional amendment banning recognition of same-gender marriage, rejecting queer advocates' claim that the measure overwhelmingly passed in November unconstitutionally dealt with more than one issue. Both equality activists and opponents were expected to appeal the ruling, whichever way it went, and most agree that the marriage issue will ultimately be decided by the state's Supreme Court.
The state of Washington's Supreme Court ruled this week that the estranged partner of a lesbian mother has the right to sue for equal custody rights of the daughter she helped nurture during their relationship, even though she has no biological connection to the child. The court majority held that Washington's common law recognizes the status of de facto parents and places them in parity with biological and adoptive parents in our state. The plaintiff will now have the opportunity to ask a lower court to rule that she does indeed meet the definition of a de facto parent and should be awarded equal custody of the child.
And Kansas juvenile offender Matthew Lamone, who already served 5 years of a 17-year prison sentence for consensual gay sex with a younger boy, has been conditionally released. Last month, the state Supreme Court struck down the law that punished Lamone for underage gay sexual activity far more harshly than similar heterosexual acts, for which the maximum sentence was 15 months. A county district judge freed Lamone this week, but ordered him to stay with an aunt and uncle to work on their farm and to attend church on Sundays. The state attorney general now has 30 days to decide whether or not to appeal the Kansas High Court ruling to the U.S. Supreme Court or to file new charges against Lamone.
And finally, open gays and lesbians have been serving in the Australian Defence Force for the past 13 years, and late last month, the ADF announced that it will recognize its partnered lesbian and gay service members as being in interdependent relationships, granting them benefits equal to those enjoyed by heterosexually married personnel. However, those benefits do not extend to veterans' pensions, as 47-year-old Jiro Takamasawa has discovered. He nursed his partner of 20 years, Jack George, through a lengthy service-related illness before the World War II veteran died last October at the age of 83. Earlier this year, Takamasawa received a letter from the Veterans Affairs Department addressed to Ms. Jiro Takamasawa, approving George's military pension. But when he phoned them to advise that he is a man, they were immediately revoked. Takamasawa's predicament was bemoaned in Parliament this week, but Veterans Affairs Minister Deanne Kelly defended the laws regarding same-gender relationships in the ADF, saying that one set of regulations, the recently enacted partner benefits, concerned internal conditions, while the other, in this case veterans' pensions, concerned compensation, which she said is unaffected by the new rules. Australia's conservative Howard administration has resisted any legal recognition of same-gender relationships, but it did recognize them this week in a less than flattering way. In the government's anti-terrorism bill approved by Parliament, a suspected terrorist same-gender partner is specifically listed as a family member he or she will be allowed to contact.
That's News Wrap for the week ending November 5th, 2005. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written this week by John Beaupre, Lucia Chappelle, and Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Jasmine Canick.
And I'm John Beaupre.
Jesse probably wouldn't like it, but a true-to-life tale from the heart of North Carolina reveals much about the hearts of people in a complex family situation. Later in the program. While same-gender couple families face legal and economic discrimination almost everywhere in the world, a new report shows that such bias disproportionately harms Hispanic same-gender families in the U.S. According to the report, they earn less and are raising more children than their white, non-Hispanic queer counterparts. Many must also overcome immigration and language barriers. The report also found, don't ask, don't tell notwithstanding, that Hispanic women in same-gender couples report military service at 6 times the rate of Hispanic women married to men and at 6 times the rate of all women in the U.S. These are just some of the findings of a unique study released this week by the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force Policy Institute in collaboration with the National Latino-Latina Coalition for Justice, a group that advocates for marriage equality. The report profiles more than 100,000 Hispanic same-gender couple households nationwide. Jason Sanciato, research director of the Task Force Policy Institute and the study's author, says it demonstrates that Hispanic same-gender couples have even more to gain from the legal protections of marriage and non-discrimination protections, and more to lose when states ban marriage equality and other forms of partner recognition.
This report provides quantitative evidence to show that these families exist and that they're disproportionately harmed by anti-gay laws, including anti-marriage amendments.
Spanish-speaking countries may be ahead of the U.S. in the evolution of enlightened partnership legislation, according to Colombian-born Sergio Sarmiento of the group Immigration Equality.
Politically speaking, we are facing probably harder times. I wouldn't be surprised, and I hope it's not going to be the case, that equality for our families is going to happen before in Latin America than in the United States. I can give you an example. Starting January 1st, 2004, Brazil, the government of Brazil, is granting immigration benefits for Brazilian citizens to sponsor their same-sex partners. The Permanent Partners Immigration Act that was introduced in February 14, 2000, here in the United States for the first time, still has not even been brought up to the full House of Representatives.
National Gay and Lesbian Task Force Executive Director Matt Foreman says garnering support for marriage equality in U.S. people of color communities is an uphill climb.
One of the real challenges in the whole marriage equality struggle across the country is both combating the stereotypes about who comprises the gay community. The stereotypes, particularly those put out by our opponents, is that marriage doesn't matter because we're white and privileged and we don't have kids. That's one of the reasons why this report and a similar report we did around African American households, same-sex households, is so important, is to combat that stereotype. And at the same time, we're fighting this very determined effort, both by the religious right and the Republican Party, to use marriage as a wedge issue in the African American and Latino Hispanic communities, based on the stereotype that all gay people are white, and that this marriage issue is something that's being foisted upon America by white gay people.
The best way to improve those odds, says Lorenzo Herrera y Lozano of the National Latino-Latina Coalition for Justice, is that familiar two-word mantra that translates in any language, come out.
By more and more of us coming out, we are able to counteract the myth that gay equals white, and that most, or that you know, that gay people are essentially white, and that there are no Latinos, and, you know, like the joke, you know, that we've heard, you know, so many times, you can't be both Latino and gay or whatever. But, you know, for instance, my family is now unable to really say it's not something we need to worry about, and it's something that they do need to worry about. It's in their home. And as more of us come out, I think that more Latino families will have to take on the issue. And, you know, I'm not exactly sure how what that will look like, and you know, certainly probably be painful. But I think it definitely will. It is going to place Latino communities and people of color communities to face this issue and not dismiss it as a white issue.
And the task force's Matt Foreman says that U.S. queer advocacy groups need to accept some responsibility for the current state of affairs.
Most of its spokespeople look like me, meaning we're white. We do not have, as a community, a very proud history of working with and for people of color. And now that we're in this incredible time of attack around marriage, I think the movement as a whole is finally understanding that, folks, we've got to change the face of our movement, the people that talk for our movement, and really fight not only for gay and lesbian people of color, but to really be allies with people of color in issues that many gay people don't perceive as gay issues, such as affirmative action, such as immigration, such as economic justice. You know, our job now as a movement is to overcome these years of neglect and bad performance. I don't know how else to say it.
You can see the complete version of the study, Hispanic and Latino Same-Sex Couples in the United States, a report from the 2000 census, online at www.thetaskforce.org. A Spanish version of the report is also available there. Reportando para This Way Out, esta es Greg Gordon. This Way Out listener Dr. Robert Simmons Jr. of Dayton, Ohio, in honor of his mother Mabel Simmons, has issued a donor matching challenge to supporters of this program. To continue doubling our pleasure, Dr. Simmons has extended the deadline to November 30th, 2005. Please visit our website, thiswayout.org, for holiday gift-giving ideas, a year-end tax break, and to see how your help to keep This Way Out on the air will still mean twice as much to us. We'd be very thankful.
Mama will never understand why you had to leave, but the answers you seek will never be found at home.
A Mother's Day quest collides with the legal barriers posed by adoption laws and the personal barriers built on homophobia in the new film by the man who previously profiled the Magic Ladies. And guess who gave him the idea? This Way Out's Steve Pride examines a fascinating multi-leveled movie called Loggerheads.
The moving, lyrical new film, Loggerheads, from writer-director Tim Kirkman, tells the story of an adoption triad: birth mother, child, and adoptive parents. The three interwoven stories take place in the days leading up to a Mother's Day weekend, but in three distinct geographical regions of North Carolina, and possibly in three different years.
Do you know what the most amazing thing is? A female loggerhead who's born on this beach will return to this exact spot to lay her eggs.
How does she know?
It's a mystery, but something pulls her back.
When birth mothers like yourself try to find relinquished children, it can be very disruptive to the adoptive family. A closed adoption protects them.
Protects them from what?
From you. What do you say when people ask about him?
They don't.
Nobody ever asked about him. He lived here his whole life. It's like he never existed.
In Asheville, Grace, an airport car rental agent, quits her job and embarks on a quest to find the son she gave up for adoption when she was just a teenager. Across the state in Cure Beach, a young man named Mark, obsessed with saving loggerhead sea turtles, meets George, a lonely motel owner, who offers him love and a place to stay. In the heart of the state, in the small town of Eden, a minister's wife struggles to confront her conservative husband over their estrangement from their adoptive son. The film was inspired by true events.
Patsy and Eloise, the magic ladies from Dear Jesse.
Writer-director Tim Kirkman.
Magic is Mothers Against Jesse in Congress. They were a political action group that was set up to try to help defeat Jesse Helms during the 1996 election. They called me and said, "We've just met someone that you need to meet. And it's this woman who had this great story about having given up a child for adoption and then her search for him through the North Carolina adoption system and the barriers that she faced in trying to do that." So as I got to know her, she shared with me not only her life, but his life. She shared with me his diaries, his writing, his photographs. His life was sort of open to me on the page. And I thought, this is a fantastic story. It needs to be told. I mean, this is a story of two people, two adults, who really wanted to meet and weren't allowed to meet because of a law.
As someone who was adopted myself, and as someone recently contacted by a biological sibling from a conservative small southern town, I can attest to the wrenching honesty of this film. Long after you've come out to one family, being gay is once again an issue. Tim Kirkman acknowledges the importance of acceptance and the role of serendipity, both in the film Loggerheads and in the real story on which it was based.
Wow, Steve. The real birth mother wrote a letter to him that she included in the letter to the adoption agency when she contacted them the first time. And she said, "If he ever contacts you and wants to know about me, give him this letter." And that letter sat in a file in that agency beside a letter to her from him. And that, to me, is great tragedy. But one of the most interesting things in that letter was a sentence that said something to the effect of, "You would be welcome in our home. We don't have a single Jesse Helms supporter in our family." And I thought, you're letting him know something. She was letting him know that if you're gay, we would love you. And I just, I knew when I read that, I said, I have to make this movie.
You know, it happens every day. Birth mothers reunited with their children.
Some states allow for that. But in North Carolina, all adoptions are closed, which means the birth records are sealed permanently. We find that's best for all members of the adoption triad.
It's best for the triad? I mean, what about him? I mean, he's at a certain age now. If he were to try to contact me, is...
Well, if an adoptee contacts us, the only thing we're allowed to provide is what's known as a letter of non-identifying information. Nothing that could ever sacrifice your anonymity.
Tim Kirkman is best known for the documentary Dear Jesse, which confronted the homophobia of politician Jesse Helms, and the film adaptation of David Drake's one-man show, The Night Larry Kramer Kissed Me, which is a scorching look at the urban gay male experience. At the heart of Loggerheads is a gay romance, the specter of AIDS, and parents unable to accept a gay son.
Yeah, I'm gay. Well, I mean, I'm a gay director because I'm gay, but I'm also a director. So the next two projects that I'm going to do don't have gay content, which is kind of interesting, or not. I mean, maybe it's boring. I told someone at Sundance, getting a lot of questions about the gay content, a woman at a screening asked me, "Do you believe that Hollywood and the media have an agenda to make it okay to accept gay people? And do you believe that by having gay characters who are likable in films, you're participating in that agenda. And I said, my only agenda is telling good stories. And this is a dramatic story. And I said, writers today are looking for conflict. There is no better place to find conflict than the fight against gay people that's happening right now from the pulpits and the houses of government in this country. They are the voices for the anti-gay movement. It's no accident that the character that is the most anti-gay in the film is a minister. That is not an accident. The true story, he was not a minister. I gave him that because that is the voice of the anti-gay movement. It's also why I made the minister not racist. He's mocking the neighbors who are racist because that's how prejudice behaves. Prejudice works across decades in that way. In the 60s, people who thought we should have separate schools and water fountains, and now these are the same people who 40 years later are saying, okay, well, we were wrong about that, but we're definitely right about the gays.
And what does filmmaker Tim Kirkman hope the audience takes away from Loggerheads?
It would be nice if the movie generated conversations about the issues, whether it's adoption rights, whether it's dealing with the tragedy that is hypocrisy and prejudice. I think that the movie is about shame, and it would be exciting to me if people started examining the ways in which shame has affected their lives, because shame is so destructive, and it can be a very healing thing to forgive other people, but to forgive yourself for something that you've done or something that you are is the only passport, I think, into actually forgiving other people. Because otherwise, if you can't live with yourself, you're going to destroy other people and you're going to destroy the world around you. And I think that's what's happened in this movie. Shame has had an echo effect on these people as individuals, in their families, and in their community.
This has been a conversation with writer-director Tim Kirkman. Loggerheads is from Strand Releasing and stars Kit Pardue, Michael Kelly, Bonnie Hunt, Tess Harper, and Chris Sarandon. For more information on Loggerheads or to hear an earlier interview with Patsy and Eloise, the Magic Ladies, who first shared this story with Tim, point your internet browser to prideonscreen.com. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Run away.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, John Beaupre, Jasmine Kanick, Lucia Chappell, Graham Underhill, Rex Walkner, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Bronski Beat performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, www.thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners. We thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to find out how your help to keep this program on the air will still mean twice as much to us. To sign up for our weekly emailed program information messages or our monthly This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on 3BBB, Ballarat, Victoria, WOJB, Hayward, Wisconsin, KBOO, Portland, Oregon, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.